This is Jordan Seculo in Washington, D.C., a new wave of Christian persecution in the Muslim world. We'll talk about it today on J. Seculo Live.
Live from Washington, D.C., J. Seculo Live.
More people around the world embrace Christianity than any other religion, and Christians are the most persecuted. That persecution happens most often in the Muslim world, as the terror group identifying itself as the Islamic State of Iraq in Syria, or ISIS, sweeps across Iraq, creating a bloodbath. And in Iran, Pastor Saeed Abedini remains in prison and has endured torture for his Christian faith.
Dietrich Bonhoeffer said, "Silence in the face of evil in itself is evil. God will not hold us guiltless. Not to speak is to speak. Not to act is to act."
Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110.
A church service in Sudan. They're praying for Maryam Yahya, a 27-year-old mother of two condemned to death by hanging. Her crime? Converting to Christianity.
Sudan and Maryam Ibrahim, and whether or not what's your understanding of her current status? Is she still there?
I don't have any update on her location, and as has been the case, we're just not going to be providing specific details on that.
Well, is she still in Sudan?
That hasn't changed. She still has the documentation, as do her children, that would be needed to travel to the United States, and as you know, there are others who don't feel that she does have that documentation.
Right, but she's still in Sudan, right?
Correct.
And now, your host, Jordan Seculo.
Welcome to J. Seculo Live. This is Jordan Seculo. We're taking your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. If you want to talk to us on air, that's 1-800-684-3110. Focusing today and much of this week on a new wave of Christian persecution, not just in the Middle East, but throughout the Muslim world. We're talking about places like North Africa. And, of course, this ongoing saga with Maryam Ibrahim, still at the U.S. Embassy. No more information, as you heard in the opening of the show from the State Department there. New charges brought by supposed family members now in the religious court, so the Islamic law court, saying that she doesn't belong to her husband, that she really still belongs to the family because they, again, don't want to recognize her Christian faith. And so we've got those. We've got people like Saeed Abedini. And the Iranians now saying in the lead up to the final nuclear negotiations in just a couple of weeks, where they're supposed to have a deal after this 6-month period, that that they're not going to discuss any other issues. So that would seem to mean that they're not going to discuss any of the human rights issues, including Americans imprisoned in Iran and this American pastor imprisoned in Iran for his Christian faith. You've got now not ISIS, but now they're calling themselves the Islamic State. A new caliphate has been established and in reality is having real success as they sweep through specific areas of the Middle East, right now mostly Iraq and Syria, but they want to go into Lebanon. They want to go into the Sinai Peninsula. Their leader, very bold, making a public appearance for the first time this weekend in Iraq at a mosque. So the idea here that the intelligence, fairly weak, on what this group that used to be known as ISIS, now is known as the Islamic State, has been doing. My dad is joining us. He's in Oxford, England. And, Dad, this new wave of persecution is as brutal as ever before.
Well, I think probably the most difficult that it's ever been in our lifetime. As you mentioned, Jordan, you were here last week. I'm at the University of Oxford right now at Exeter College, participating in a major program on contemporary issues in the Middle East, specifically dealing with everything from persecution to religious minorities to just the whole jihadist threat. And I will tell you, one of the main tutors, one of the main teachers, one of the most well-known lecturers around the world on the issue of Iran said to me, and this is significant, that ISIS is the greatest threat that we've seen in the Middle East in our lifetime, including much more significant than Al-Qaeda. We'll get into this after the break, but it's huge.
Folks, we have got to take a stand for the persecuted. Call now. Add your name to our brand new petition, 877-989-2255. It's happening. Hamas continuing their rocket barrage on Israel, the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria. Call now. 877-989-2255. People are being crucified in 2014. 877-989-2255.
Around the globe, especially in the Middle East, the persecution of Christians continues to grow at an alarming rate. With each day, there are new reports of Christians being murdered, even crucified, by radical Islamic terrorists simply because of their Christian faith. At the ACLJ, we're engaged in this vital issue, working to free American pastor Saeed Abedini, imprisoned nearly 2 years in Iran because of his Christian faith. And in the Sudan, Miriam Ibrahim and her American family, her husband and two young kids, prohibited from leaving that country to return to the United States. We must do all we can to bring an end to this global persecution of Christians, especially in the Middle East. That's why we're launching a new campaign, calling on the Obama administration to take all diplomatic efforts to protect Christians from this wave of persecutions. Add your name now. Call 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255, or add your name online, aclj.org.
This is Jay Sekulow, Chief Counsel for the ACLJ. The battle to defend our religious freedom is being fought in courtrooms at the highest level. The need for exceptionally trained lawyers to protect our future is vital. Regent University School of Law is the nation's preeminent Christian law program for anyone considering a career in law today. ABA-accredited Regent Law ranks top 10 in the nation in faculty, according to the Princeton Review. With over 66 awards, Regent also placed in the top two in the Oxford University Global Moot Court Championship, besting both Oxford and Cambridge. The ACLJ is located on Regent's campus in Virginia Beach, Virginia, offering students an unprecedented opportunity to work on landmark Supreme Court cases through our association. Real-world training by real-world lawyers for today's unprecedented challenges. Come and study law where the law began. For information, go to regent.edu/law. That's regent.edu/law.
Welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow. I'm in Washington, D.C. My dad's in Oxford, England. We're both joining you live talking about this growing wave, new wave of Christian persecution happening not just in the Middle East, though certainly happening in the Middle East, but throughout the Muslim world, North Africa as well, in places like Sudan, where Miriam Ibrahim's situation has still not been resolved and now facing new civil court, what they call civil court, which is really Islamic court, challenges against supposed family members. Some of this really does relate to her somewhat successful business in Sudan that this family is trying to seize, and they're willing to have her executed to do so. So you do have to question the sincerity of whether or not these are even family members. The Sudanese government has refused to let Miriam leave, even though she is at the U.S. Embassy, and many are calling today that we don't forget about Miriam Ibrahim and the family, her American husband, American children, because, you know, in this situation, it is far from over. There have been a couple times where, like, it was going to be a good outcome. And, of course, you've got people like Pastor Saeed Abedini still in prison in Iran, and Iranian negotiators saying, we're not going to discuss those types of issues at the nuclear talks. That's significant because those are supposed to wrap up on July 20th, and there's supposed to be a more comprehensive deal after this first six-month-long deal. And you've got now Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, who has declared himself a new caliph and established a new Islamic caliphate. He appeared for the first time in public, in a gutsy move, many have said, because he is someone with a six million dollar bounty on his head by a number of different governments, and of course, you know, with drone strikes and things like that. The fact that he appeared at a mosque, again, this is extremely significant. He has now declared that they are no longer the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria or the Levant. They are now the Islamic State, and they have called it that. And it is a medieval-style Islamic law that is being imposed. And we say medieval, Dad, because people are being crucified in town squares.
Right. So as I mentioned before the break, and folks, this is really significant. We're, as I said, participating in this global forum on the Middle East. I've got lawyers and government affairs people from India, from Germany, from France, I mean, from all over the globe. Here's the issue. In talking to the person that's really in charge of this portion of the program, who's an expert on Iran, he's an Iranian-British national, left Iran as the revolution broke out, so obviously was very much opposed to the Ayatollahs and the mullahs. He's very clear about that. But he said this threat to, as you were just talking about, from the group that was formerly known as ISIS, but now it's just the Islamic State. He thinks it's much more significant of a threat. And this is a world expert, folks. Regarding stability in the Middle East, that this is the greatest threat we've seen, period, much more so than Al-Qaeda. Now, I think when you see the crucifixion of Christians, and others for that matter, they're sending a message. When they take over vast regions of territory, which they are, that is sending a message. So all of a sudden, they start looking like a nation state, which is what Al-Qaeda has not been able to accomplish. And now you've got Hezbollah willing to join up and link up with ISIS, or formerly known as ISIS, the Islamic State, because they've got money, they've got power, and we've got a situation in the Middle East that in our lifetime, as Jordan just said, the Levant, that's the Middle East region, has never seen this kind of turmoil. We'll never forget what happened on 9/11, the lethality abilities of what could happen now, as compared to 14 years ago, have significantly increased the danger, and this group has got their hands on billions, let me underscore this, billions of dollars. And, so far, our State Department response has been, as it is with so many of these cases, muted at best with no real policy. And we've got to come at this with a policy that makes sense. Now, you talk about Meriem Ibrahim. I mean, my goodness, she's in the U.S. embassy. She's in a U.S. protectorate. Do we not have the political will and capital to get her removed? I mean, it's mind-boggling. Saeed Abedini, Jordan, you just mentioned that. So we've got Pastor Abedini in jail in Iran. We're sitting down with the Iranians for another 2.5 weeks, and the Iranians are so emboldened that they will say human rights is off the charts, off the records, not going to discuss it. And what's the response from our State Department? Pretty muted. So we've got to stand up, as Jordan mentioned, we've got to stand up for these Christians that are being literally hung, threatened to be hung, or actually crucified. I mean, folks, we're in 2014, and they are crucifying people in the Middle East. And we have got to mobilize. We've got to mobilize with the UN. We've got to mobilize globally. I want to encourage you folks to sign that petition, a brand-new petition that's up at aclj.org or 1-877-989-2255. We've got to get the State Department to move. We've got to get the UN to move. We need to get our allies in the region mobilized here. This has got huge ramifications. ACLJ.org or 1-877-989-2255. And also, we're in a matching challenge campaign, folks. That just started in July. We're just beginning it now. Any amount you donate to the ACLJ, of course, is tax deductible, but we get a matching gift for it, and we'd appreciate that at ACLJ.org.
Again, folks, we want to talk to you today live on the air, 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110 if you want to talk to us on air now. I'm in Washington, D.C. My dad is in Oxford, England, joining us internationally as we talk about this sweeping wave of persecution. And, folks, if you want to sign our petition to get involved, to stand for those being persecuted in this massive wave, this is not just the incident here and there. It's not just Meriem Ibrahim, and it's not just Saeed Abedini. We're talking about entire towns, villages of 10,000 people having to flee because of the new Islamic State that's operating in both Iraq and Syria. Their leader, who has basically been in hiding, even does many of his meetings with his top leadership, with his face covered so that no one can identify him, is now going public. That's al-Baghdadi, the name you may have heard. So he's now on Friday giving a speech at a mosque in Iraq. That is how emboldened these radical Islamists have become, and we have to take a stand here. Call now, 877-989-2255. That's 877-989-2255. You can also go to aclj.org and give us a call, 1-800-684-3110. What do you think the United States should be doing about this growing wave of persecution? Unfortunately, so much of it now happening in a country where we were a major military force in Iraq, and we pulled out, and now Christian villages that have been historically there since biblical times, they're having to flee into refugee camps. Syria, the atrocities keep building up one by one, and you've even got reports that Christians in Syria are relying on not the United States, but Vladimir Putin of Russia to save them. that they believe that the Russian Orthodox Church may end up being the heroes for Christians in Syria. Where is the United States on these issues? It seems like when we get an opportunity to do something good, we botch it. Like with Miriam Ibrahim, who was at the airport ready to leave, and it was paperwork. Paperwork that she didn't compile, but the United States government compiled. We've got to do a better job. We've got to put more pressure on our government. These should not be partisan issues. Call now and take a stand for the persecuted. 877-989-2255. We've also got a matching challenge online at aclj.org. Anything you donate is effectively doubled for the American Center for Law and Justice. A $10 donation becoming $20, and it goes on up right from there. aclj.org to take part in that matching challenge. And if you want to talk to us on air, 1-800-684-3110. Let's go to Rob in Maine online too. Rob, welcome to Jay Secchio Live.
Hey, how's it going?
Hi, Rob. Good.
Yeah, I just had a question. I always hear about all this horrific stuff overseas, but one thing I never hear anybody discuss is the why they feel they need to crucify or murder or kill, you know? And I personally think that's a very important question that, you know, not just as Christians, but as a society and America themselves, we need to make sure everybody understands, you know, why people do what they do, not just what they do.
No, I think that's it. Listen, Rob, I think that's a great question. The why they do it and why particularly they're utilizing crucifixion is it sends a significant signal. It is, as Jordan said, it's beyond medieval in a sense. It's back to the times of Jesus himself. So what was the most insulting, humiliating thing you could do to someone at the time of Jesus that, quote, committed a crime? You would crucify them. So these radical jihadists of a proportion we've never seen before that are organizing now as a nation state are utilizing the same technique to not only brutalize, humiliate, kill, mayhem, and fear among Christians. And it's not just Christians, by the way, but of course the Christian crucifixion issue is particularly poignant. And the reality is they're doing this to convey their message. What is their message? They're very clear. They are now trying to create the caliphate, the Islamic caliphate. They're not hiding that. The problem here is rather than Al-Qaeda, which is cell groups that are dangerous, don't get me wrong, but are not state organized. These are not just state organized. Now, they've actually captured territory and assets. So they are the reason they're doing this is not only to show it's not just, by the way, aimed at the United States. You understand that this is an inter-Islamic fight as well between the Sunni and the Shia. And in the Sunni, it's not, by the way, good or bad. It's the fact is that this is the nature of the conflict, and it's to humiliate. Christians are the sideline, but they're trying to send a message to the West with that.
Folks, call now. We need you to take a stand. 877-989-2255. Standing for the persecuted. Put pressure not just on President Obama, Congress too. 877-989-2255. Take part in our matching challenge online at aclj.org.
The American Center for Law and Justice is on the front lines, holding the Internal Revenue Service accountable for a targeting scheme aimed at conservative and Tea Party groups. The ACLJ represents 41 organizations in 22 states in the largest lawsuit against the IRS on behalf of targeted Americans. Now it is time for the story to be told. The ACLJ has put together a short movie telling the story and explaining the high stakes of our fight against IRS abuse. ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow sat down with Senators Ted Cruz and Rand Paul, Dr. Ben Carson, and many national leaders to tell this critical story. You can watch this movie free of charge. Go online to download this powerful new film, Tax Invasion, at aclj.org. That's aclj.org. Around the globe, especially in the Middle East, the persecution of Christians continues to grow at an alarming rate. With each day, there are new reports of Christians being murdered, even crucified, by radical Islamic terrorists simply because of their Christian faith. At the ACLJ, we're engaged in this vital issue, working to free American pastor Saeed Abedini, imprisoned nearly 2 years in Iran because of his Christian faith. And in the Sudan, Miriam Ibrahim and her American family, her husband and two young kids, prohibited from leaving that country to return to the United States. We must do all we can to bring an end to this global persecution of Christians, especially in the Middle East. That's why we're launching a new campaign, calling on the Obama administration to take all diplomatic efforts to protect Christians from this wave of persecutions. Add your name now. Call 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255 or add your name online, aclj.org.
Welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow. We are taking your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. Now joined by David French, a senior counsel with the American Center for Law and Justice, and we'll be taking your phone calls now on this new wave of persecution throughout, I say, the Muslim world, because it's not just the Middle East. It's also happening in North Africa, and we're going to take your phone calls right now. Many of you are now calling in to talk about this. Let's go to AJ in Colorado on line 6. AJ, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Good morning. I'm an ex-serviceman, and what I see now happening in the world, it seems like our administration has become sympathetic to the terrorist groups out there now. Christians are being prosecuted. They're turning their heads at and not even batting an eye at everything that they're doing right now. They're building up their forces, and they're coming at us, and they're going to come at us. And I'll be the first to say, you know, being an ex-military and having been in combat, you know what? The United States is headed for a big, huge surprise. There's a slew of Islamic people here already. Now, what makes the United States government not think that these people can do damage from inside our own country?
Folks, I think let me say, AJ, the idea here that this is a new threat. That we have to deal with it in a realistic way. Political correctness has to, in a sense, be tossed out the window. You don't want to make generalizations, but you do have to have a new focus and a new specialty. And David, the idea here is, you know, we've talked a lot about the threat within the United States, but, you know, right now what we're seeing is somewhat similar to how we saw groups like the Taliban and Al-Qaeda spawn. Is the initial focus happens within their regions. They establish somewhat effective governments in the sense that they've seized billions of dollars. They've got resources now, and the Islamic State led by al-Baghdadi has that. And then that becomes a spawn for overseas terrorist activity, which certainly threatens the United States. I mean, this is not just about the idea of Sharia law in the U.S. This is the idea of terrorism. I mean, I just came back from the U.K. where my dad is, and you know, you've got the new travel warnings, the new threats, I mean, the new security level because of supposed new bombs that can get through undetected at airports.
Well, you know, the leader of ISIS or ISIL or however you want to say it has already said, see you in New York. I mean, look, their ambition is not just to control a region of Iraq and Syria and then leave everybody alone. And anyone who thinks that is woefully uninformed. Yes, they're going to want to consolidate their control where they are. Yes, they want to establish their caliphate there. I mean, they've already declared a caliphate there. But once they do that, this is now the richest terror organization in the world. They stole over $500 million from central banks in Mosul, Iraq. This is one of the richest terror organizations ever. And that's just one slice of jihad. I saw a projection that there are now 100,000 jihadist fighters in the field right now. 100,000 worldwide. That's more than there's ever been in the field now. And so a lot of this has been done right in front of President Obama with his naive foreign policy and a chronic unwillingness to face reality.
Folks, we're going to continue. Phone calls 1-800-684-3110. We have a matching challenge right now. Anything you donate online to the ACLJ at aclj.org or by phone is effectively doubled. I mean, a $5 donation becomes $10, $20 becomes $40. You can make that donation quickly online at aclj.org so we can do all the work that we do. You may have seen my dad on television live from London last week when the HHS mandate case came out of the Supreme Court. We're able to do all of that because of your support. There is a matching challenge again online at ACLJ.org. And on the issue of persecution, we're at the forefront. We represent the Abedini family or the cases like Youssef Nader Khani, the advocacy for Miriam Ibrahim. We're meeting with the State Department. We're meeting with members of Congress, working on legislation, working at the United Nations, really, truly around the world. Our office in Israel, we haven't even talked about that threat as much today on the broadcast and what's, you know, could just totally erupt in Israel between the Palestinians and the Israelis. We'll talk about that as well this week. We need you to take a stand for those facing persecution, for this unprecedented new wave of violence and brutality against Christians. Call now. Let's put pressure on President Obama. Let's put pressure on Congress as well. In a bipartisan effort, call now, 877-989-2255. That's 877-989-2255. Adding your name to the petition. That's a toll-free number. Let's go to Gabriel in North Carolina on line 5. Gabriel, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hey, how are you?
Good, Gabriel.
I'm listening to this, and I'm riding around. I have errands to do, and I can't believe what I'm hearing. And my question is the crucifixions, are the crucifixions that are happening, are they actually being nailed to the crosses? They're being nailed.
They are. I mean, I wouldn't encourage you to do this, and certainly you're going to see things that you may not want to see. You could see these photos online. So you could see it from a number of news outlets. You've got people. Here's the exact, just so you know, I'm not just talking, reading, you know, two different news reports. Here's the Christian Post. Meanwhile, the group, this is the Islamic State, crucified 9 men to a cross in the main square of a village in Syria, Al-Bab, near the border with Turkey for rebelling against President Assad and jihadist groups, according to the Syrian Observatory for Human Rights. Only one of the men survived, but the other 8 died. And that again gives you the indication of that it's not just being tied up to a cross and humiliated, but that it is, of course, physically violent and brutal, as you talked about, Gabriel, being nailed to a cross. This is from the UK Telegraph, which explains how one could even survive this. The man from Al-Bab near the border with Turkey was crucified as a punishment. This is the survivor. He managed to survive the ordeal, but 8 others who received the same punishment did not survive. The men, they're from the east of Aleppo province in Syria, were subjected to the same treatment and crucified in the main square of the village, where their bodies had to remain for 3 days. So, Gabriel, of course, it would be seriously physically unpleasant and painful to be tied up for 3 days, but would not necessarily lead to death without significant violence. You know, of course, I mean, if you hung someone, that could be one way, but the pictures are there. I don't want to get too descriptive here, more than saying it's the crucifixion that we read about in the Bible. It's happening. You can see it online. The news reports have been very clear about this. This is what why the Islamic State, Gabriel, is being called medieval, that they are bringing this medieval Islamic caliphate back into the Muslim world. Let's go back to the phones again. 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. Patricia in Tennessee on line 4. Patricia, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Yes. What I was wondering is she is safe in the U.S. Embassy, but the same thing that happened at Benghazi and President Obama didn't do anything and those 4 men died. Yeah. It seems like our U.S. embassies are becoming less and less of a safe.
Let me tell you, the U.S. embassy in Khartoum probably has good security, but it is far from over. I mean, I'd go to David French when we get back with the first second half hour of the broadcast. You can hear on Sirius XM or online at ACLJ.org for free. Stay on the phone if you've called us. But the truth is, Patricia, you make a great point. And this is why we don't treat Miriam Ibrahim's situation like it's over, just because it may be better for a moment being in an embassy. Certainly it is, because she's still in a very hostile place, a top state sponsor of terror, where being labeled an apostate is extremely dangerous. And she was in U.S. custody once, in a good way, and they took her back, the Sudanese. Folks, we'll be right back on the broadcast.
We must do all we can to bring an end to this global persecution of Christians, especially in the Middle East. That's why we're launching a new campaign, calling on the Obama administration to take all diplomatic efforts to protect Christians from this wave of persecutions. Add your name now. Call 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255 or add your name online, aclj.org.
Folks, we're going to continue to take your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. Welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow in Washington, D.C., joined by David French, Senior Counsel with the ACLJ. And David, I wanted to pick up. We're talking about this growing wave of Christian persecution, new wave of persecution, extremely brutal. Christina, who was our caller in the first half hour, just as we were finishing the broadcast, mentioned that Miriam Ibrahim, you know, she may be in the embassy, but in Sudan, which is not a safe place by any means. And, you know, that doesn't necessarily guarantee your safety.
Oh, absolutely not. I mean, we're not that far removed from the wave of attacks on embassies. The caller brought up Benghazi, but it was also our embassy was overrun in Egypt. We had an embassy overrun in Tunisia. We had the black flag of jihad hoisted over several American embassies in about a three-day span. So as I've said, as we've said, as we've all said many times, Miriam Ibrahim is not safe until she's on free soil. And that should be the single-minded focus of the Obama administration, is bringing her back to free soil. But it's not just her. I mean, Saeed, Pastor Saeed, the Obama administration's single-minded focus should be bringing him back. And yet we continue to give Iran billions of dollars in sanctions relief, even as he's being tortured and abused in prison.
Folks, we're going to continue again. Take your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. Let me go to Bob in California on line one. Bob, welcome to JSecuo Live.
Thank you very much.
Hey, Bob, you're on the air.
Yeah, I just had a follow-up question about Saeed. Can you give me a status? And also, how do I answer Persian relatives that claim he was taken because of a CIA assignment?
Yeah, I mean, there's no allegations whatsoever. Now, you may be confusing the two, and I'm not trying to put words in your mouth that you confuse it, but Bob Levinson, who is a missing American, believed to be being held by the Al-Quds Brigade in Iran, that's part of the Revolutionary Guard, who was associated working on a CIA contract project, and he's been missing for a number of years. In Saeed's case, everything was related to his Christian faith. So all the charges against him, what he was convicted of, and there's been nothing from the Iranians. And let me tell you something, they would definitely be putting that out there if they thought they even could, because that's a typical charge, a very normal charge actually in Iran when it comes to persecution, is to label someone a spy or a Zionist for the enemy. There's also Amir Hekmati, who you also could be getting confused with. He is a U.S. Marine, a former U.S. Marine who was Iranian-American visiting his grandmother. He's also imprisoned in Iran. So that's the way the story lines up right now. You asked about an update. The update is Saeed's family's been able to visit. You know, he's back in prison. He's experiencing some significant health problems again, hoping to get treatment. And though Iran is denying it, you know, we always have hope when the U.S. is going to be sitting across the table with Iran this month trying to hammer out a nuclear deal. We continue to do a lot of work here, meeting with the State Department. We still need pressure on the Obama administration, working with Congress, and, of course, working all over the world and internationally as well. And you can always go to aclj.org and get updated on that matter. And continue to pray for Saeed Abedini, their children, and Naghmeh Abedini, his wife, who I know many of you have heard from on the broadcast, seen on television. Let me go to Matt in Virginia online too. Matt, welcome to JSecuo Live.
Hey, how you doing today?
Good, Matt. Thanks for calling.
Hey, listen, I agree with the one previous caller. Not 100%, but largely. in what he says that the current administration seems like they're even sympathetic. As much as I hate to say that, it's distasteful, but they just seem sympathetic to themselves rather than what they should be paying attention to. I'm not going to go so far as to say they're sympathetic to the enemy. I think that's reaching a bit. But what do you expect from a president who is not a Christian, first off, in my opinion, and second off, seems to have all the working parts of an enemy to our country?
Well, you know what it is? It's trying to appease the enemy instead of calling out the enemy and standing up for what's right. You know, the faith, personal faith, it's not even about, there are plenty of people who may not be Christians who would stand up to the wrong better than how President Obama has done this. So I think that that's not even that relevant. Here, it's a situation of good versus evil. Call now and take a stand for the persecuted. 877-989-2255 or go to aclj.org. Be a part of our matching challenge.
Around the globe, especially in the Middle East, the persecution of Christians continues to grow at an alarming rate. With each day, there are new reports of Christians being murdered, even crucified, by radical Islamic terrorists simply because of their Christian faith. At the ACLJ, we're engaged in this vital issue, working to free American pastor Saeed Abedini, imprisoned nearly 2 years in Iran because of his Christian faith. And in the Sudan, Miriam Ibrahim and her American family, her husband and two young kids, prohibited from leaving that country to return to the United States. We must do all we can to bring an end to this global persecution of Christians, especially in the Middle East. That's why we're launching a new campaign, calling on the Obama administration to take all diplomatic efforts to protect Christians from this wave of persecutions. Add your name now. Call 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255 or add your name online, aclj.org. The American Center for Law and Justice is on the front lines, holding the Internal Revenue Service accountable for a targeting scheme aimed at conservative and Tea Party groups. The ACLJ represents 41 organizations in 22 states in the largest lawsuit against the IRS on behalf of targeted Americans. Now it is time for the story to be told. The ACLJ has put together a short movie telling the story and explaining the high stakes of our fight against IRS abuse. ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow sat down with Senators Ted Cruz and Rand Paul, Dr. Ben Carson, and many national leaders to tell this critical story. You can watch this movie free of charge. Go online to download this powerful new film, Tax Invasion, at aclj.org. That's aclj.org.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the broadcast. Stan Bennett in Washington, D.C. We continue to talk about the unfolding crisis that is taking place in the Middle East, not only in Iraq with this new radical group ISIS, but across the Middle East where people are being persecuted on account of their faith. Christians are being crucified on account of their faith. Some of the most horrific stories are now coming out of Iraq. This new group, ISIS, the group that is trying to take over large portions of Iraq and Syria, crucifying people in the town squares, folks. We at the ACLJ have been engaged in this fight for a number of years now, calling on this administration to take seriously the religious persecution that is taking place in the region, specifically the religious persecution of Christians. If you want to stand with us and call for the administration to make this a priority, to work for the freedom of Christians in the Middle East, I want you to call now 877-989-2255 or go online at aclj.org. I want to play for you a segment of our documentary that's called The Export. This is our look at how this tragedy in the Middle East has unfolded, how this religious persecution at the hand of extremists has really taken off. You're going to hear in this segment from people like John Bolton, John Ashcroft, and also Andrew McCarthy. If you want to see the entire documentary, you can find it online at aclj.org. But again, this is a segment from our documentary called The Export.
We are all for international law. I'm all for international law. In the international world, in the global village, we need international law. We need to contain the bad guys from doing awful things. We all have seen it after the Second World War with the Nuremberg trial. We've seen it in Rwanda. We've seen it in Yugoslavia. There are cases where the international community should interfere and stop cruelties and stop awful things from happening and war crimes. I'm all for it. But when you see a situation like we are in, being attacked by thousands of rockets, they from Hamas, for years after we have left Gaza altogether. And then we defend ourselves in a short war of 2 or 3 weeks. And then we become the war criminals. This is really either ludicrous, or call it what adjective you want to add here. This is really abuse of law.
I think, you know, if there are any serious lawyers out there, they must know that most of their activities have very little legal merit. But I think what they work on is the idea that where there's smoke, there's fire. It's a unfortunate human characteristic that when we see smoke, we assume there's fire. When Israelis are spoken about in context as being war criminals, when Americans are spoken about as being war criminals, and you attach the two all the time, there doesn't need to be a trial at the end of the day. No judge has to pronounce guilt or innocence at the end of the day. It's just out there. There are a lot of people in the world today, you know, who, for some reason, are getting this message that Israel is now becoming less legitimate. Israel is a rogue state. Why? Simply because they're being accused of war crimes without any real reference to what exactly took place.
It takes a legitimate tool that we are all for in criminal law, international criminal law, international criminal court, that was set by the Rome Convention of 2002, and use it in an ill will for the wrong reasons, and they won't succeed.
Is this part of their warfare? Is this the new part of their warfare?
There is another warfare, you can call it soft warfare. It's not less devastating, but it's soft in that you don't always use weapons. You use flotillas. You use women who look wonderful, and all they want to do is to support an organization called Hamas that says Israel will not exist. That's all. That's all they say. But you sometimes use the media. Today, in the world of today, I say to you, because you work on television, every war is fought in two places at the same time, in the battlefield and on the screen. To take paraphrase Shakespeare, all the world's a screen. And you get information on the screen. If you lose the screen, you may lose the war.
They've, for years, worked well with the international media. And so it's the same basic process. Instead of talking just to a favorite reporter at CNN or something else, what they have to do here is feed material to human rights organizations or to the UN.
So you need to adapt yourself. We need to adapt ourselves to the new world we live in. We can't stop camera from coming in. But you need to put it in perspective that will still explain the just cause you're fighting for. So, yes, they are using this too. They're using the war and the atrocities of war, which always exist. And we should do our best to fight wars in a way that will not only be successful, but will not look ugly. It's very difficult. In every war, whether it's Afghanistan, whether it's against the Nazis, whether it's Napoleon against the Russians. Only there was no camera there. You had to wait for Tolstoy to write War and Peace to see what happened in the war. We didn't see it real time.
It's very hard for an American to think of a day where they don't have total control over the country. But I have news for them. It happened to superpowers before. They were taken in from within before, and I don't want to see that in America ever. But I expect in 50, 60 years there's going to be a concentration of Muslims in a certain area of America. They're going to demand Sharia law from the federal government and to self-rule. If this is not approved by the federal government, there will be a secession movement.
To depart from the United States?
To depart from the United States. And this has happened before in history. In India, Pakistan departed from India.
So we have to stand up?
Absolutely. Do we want to have a Chechnya in America? Mm. Well, what's Chechnya? It's Muslims who went to live in an area in Russia. They were originally from the area, and they're now holding their allegiance to Saudi Arabia and the Islamic world, and they want to secede from Russia.
So we can't afford, as a country, to just ignore this?
No.
We do it at our own peril?
If we care about remaining the United States that I think we want to remain, we have to pay very close attention to this.
Let me ask you this. I want to take this whole lawfare concept and move it towards Iran. First of all, Iran is a threat right now. You've written a lot about this. You've talked about it. How significant is Iran as a threat today, not just to Israel, but to Western democracy?
I think most people in the West don't understand the Iranian threat. Because, you know, we hear about nuclear weapons. We hear about missiles. And the general tendency is to think, okay, sometime in 2016, the Iranians will be able to launch a single rocket at New York with a nuclear warhead. That's not the issue. The issue is the moment the Iranians have nuclear weapons, you know what happens? They have a nuclear umbrella over their international terrorist capability.
I would say this. Iran foreign policy is based upon two main paths, two legs. The first is the attempt to support jihadist proxy groups. I don't know if Khomeini read or did not read Trotsky. Trotsky said, a revolution that does not export itself is doomed to collapse to the inside. And from day one, Khomeini and its followers were trying to export the revolution to other countries. That's one leg. The other leg is the attempt to acquire nuclear military capability. This is the insurance policy of the regime. However, the first leg is used as a bargain chip to threaten Israel and the United States. Do not dare to attack our facilities, our nuclear facilities, because if you do, we would launch a world campaign of terrorism against your targets. And therefore, you should not even dare, even think of launching such an aerial strike. So these two legs are defending each other.
When we talk about the issue of Iran and we talk about what they're doing, what is the goal to what they're engaging in? I mean, if they were to get nuclear weapons, why do they want it? What are they trying to do? What are they trying to spread?
Well, they wanted to become superpower in the world. They want to spread the Shiite ideological belief, and they want to see more and more Shiite countries in our region.
If Iran does end up with nuclear weapons, what's the end result?
I don't think Iran is subject to classical theories of deterrence. I think it worked through luck during the Cold War. It's not a system we should want to live under. And Iran has a very different calculus about the benefits of human life than even the Soviet Union did. But even if I were wrong about our capability to deter Iran, it doesn't stop there. If Iran gets nuclear weapons, Saudi Arabia will, Egypt will, Turkey, perhaps others. So in 5 to 10 years, you could have a multipolar nuclear Middle East with half a dozen countries with nuclear weapons. That is a formula for insecurity.
Are we at the point right now where the threat from Iran has reached its zenith or is getting to that point?
Yes, because this is a sort of a question of science and technology, because Iranian nuclear project is reaching maybe not the point of no return, which is a vague point, but is reaching a point when Iran is getting very, very close to the capability of assembling a first nuclear warhead. And then Israel needs to take a decision whether to strike or not, because once Iran has the warhead, it is too late to strike. You need to do it before. You cannot do unruling for once a country has the nuclear weapon.
For us, it is going to be an existential threat once Iran will have the nuclear, military nuclear capability. Then we will execute our right for self-defense.
Again, folks, that was a segment from our documentary called The Export. If you want to see the entire thing, it is online at aclj.org. But you've heard specific examples of this persecution, folks. You know about Saeed Abedini. You know about Miriam Ebrahim. Folks, there are thousands of others just like them that are suffering for their faith in the Middle East. If you want to tell the administration that this has got to be a priority for the United States of America, the freest country in the world, stand with us. Call 877-989-2255 or sign online at aclj.org. Persecuting people for their faith must not be tolerated by the United States of America. 877-989-2255.
This is Jay Sekulow, Chief Counsel for the ACLJ. The battle to defend our religious freedom is being fought in courtrooms at the highest level. The need for exceptionally trained lawyers to protect our future is vital. Regent University School of Law is the nation's preeminent Christian law program for anyone considering a career in law today. ABA-accredited Regent Law ranks top 10 in the nation in faculty, according to the Princeton Review. With over 66 awards, Regent also placed in the top two in the Oxford University Global Moot Court Championship, besting both Oxford and Cambridge. The ACLJ is located on Regent's campus in Virginia Beach, Virginia, offering students an unprecedented opportunity to work on landmark Supreme Court cases through our association. Real-world training by real-world lawyers for today's unprecedented challenges. Come and study law where the law began. For information, go to regent.edu/law. That's regent.edu/law.
Around the globe, especially in the Middle East, the persecution of Christians continues to grow at an alarming rate. With each day, there are new reports of Christians being murdered, even crucified, by radical Islamic terrorists simply because of their Christian faith. At the ACLJ, we're engaged in this vital issue, working to free American pastor Saeed Abedini, imprisoned nearly 2 years in Iran because of his Christian faith. And in the Sudan, Miriam Ibrahim and her American family, her husband and two young kids, prohibited from leaving that country to return to the United States. We must do all we can to bring an end to this global persecution of Christians, especially in the Middle East. That's why we're launching a new campaign, calling on the Obama administration to take all diplomatic efforts to protect Christians from this wave of persecutions. Add your name now. Call 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255, or add your name online, aclj.org.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live, Than Bennett in Washington, D.C. We are going to jump right into a segment from our special documentary called The Export. This is our look at the unfolding crisis in the Middle East, the spread of radical Islam in the Middle East, and the persecution of specifically Christians that is occurring in the region. A lot of notable Middle East experts are in this documentary. If you want to see the entire thing, you can find it online at aclj.org. But now, a segment from our documentary called The Export.
Ambassador, I want to first ask you about the Goldstone report. You made a very interesting, I think, important comment about the criticism aimed at Israel for disproportionate response, and your statement that in warfare, whether it's the legal system being utilized or actual military engagement, that disproportionate response is part of what has to happen.
It is basic American doctrine that we have at least the option to use overwhelming force against our adversaries. We have that military doctrine because we want to protect American lives. We want to protect innocent civilian lives. And the best way to defeat the enemy is to do it quickly and overwhelmingly. It is essential to self-defense, to be able not simply to respond to a particular attack, but to eliminate the threat to your national security to begin with. And that's the real question of what proportionality involves or what is legitimate. And until that's better understood in the international system, we're going to see additional threats to the ability of the United States and its friends and allies to defend themselves in the war against terrorism.
Let's take it right to Iran. First of all, you know better than anybody because of your work here as ambassador at the UN and just generally in your knowledge of this area. How significant is Iran as a threat right now?
Well, right now, Iran is the world's central banker to international terrorism. It funds Hamas, Hezbollah, terrorists in Afghanistan and Iraq and around the world. If you add to existing Iranian activities the capability to deliver nuclear weapons anywhere in the world, you make Iran a world power and a world threat. That's why it is legitimate for the United States, Israel, or others to take action now in self-defense to prevent Iran from continuing to violate its own treaty obligations and obtain nuclear weapons. It's not a desirable alternative, to be sure, but the preemptive use of military force in this case is actually far preferable to the world as it would be once Iran gets nuclear weapons.
I was going to follow up with that, because do you have any confidence whatsoever in the UN's capability or institutional willingness to take the kind of sanctions necessary to get Iran to stop?
There may well be a fourth sanctions resolution coming, but it will be just as toothless as the first three, and it will not do anything material to dissuade Iran from continuing its 20-year-long project to obtain nuclear weapons. The most likely outcome today, absent the use of military force by someone, is that Iran will have nuclear weapons and very soon.
If Iran does end up with nuclear weapons, what's the end result?
I don't think Iran is subject to classical theories of deterrence. I think it worked through luck during the Cold War. It's not a system we should want to live under. And Iran has a very different calculus about the benefits of human life than even the Soviet Union did. But even if I were wrong about our capability to deter Iran, it doesn't stop there. If Iran gets nuclear weapons, Saudi Arabia will, Egypt will, Turkey, perhaps others. So in 5 to 10 years, you could have a multipolar nuclear Middle East with half a dozen countries with nuclear weapons. That is a formula for insecurity.
Insecurity, but also the ending of democracies like Israel as we know it?
Right. I think in a multipolar nuclear Middle East, you'd have many countries looking at the one next door saying, I wonder if I should strike first before he strikes me. And I would think at that point, the use of nuclear weapons becomes almost inevitable.
Last question, and that is, can the world afford to wait?
I don't believe so, and I've felt this way for some time. I think it is a mistake to overestimate how much time we have in Iran. I don't believe in just-in-time non-proliferation, because if you miscalculate and Iran gets nuclear weapons, the entire balance of power has changed. We're in a very critical year this year.
General Ashcroft, let's go back to September 11th, 2001, and put this in a historical context. The president, the first lady, were on a reading initiative for students. In fact, we always remember that shot of the president being whispered to by Andy Card while he was in the reading program in Florida. What was your day like that day?
I was destined for Milwaukee, Wisconsin, again dispatched by the president, as other cabinet members were, to be reading with students that day. However, before I got to Milwaukee, the word got to me when I was over central Michigan. I remember on the one side of the plane, Kalamazoo, and on the other side of the plane, Grand Rapids.
What did they tell you?
Literally, the voice barked out of the cockpit saying, General Ashcroft, call the command center. Now, that could mean any number of things. It certainly didn't register with me at the time that I was going to be informed of this massive assault on America and her institutions. But I picked up the phone. The command center began to relate to me the details which were unfolding at the time.
What did they first tell you?
Well, they told me that there had been these planes that crashed into the Twin Towers. They told me that it appeared that this was not accidental, that there was a lot of uncertainty, and that there were other things that were still unfolding. I turned to the individuals in the plane with me, and I said, the world will never be the same.
Yeah, you've said that before. We've talked about that before. The event had just started unfolding. The two planes had hit the towers in New York. Yet you already knew that the world, to the people you were traveling with, your staff, that the world was never going to be the same. What do you mean by that?
Well, we may have overestimated the number of casualties. I don't know whether your mind will carry you back to September the 11th, but we were thinking 10 to 15,000 people dead, potentially. And there are a number of miraculous stories that surround 9/11, where people were late for work or their conference, which was to have been convened in the neighborhood, was delayed or put into another setting. So we had anticipated on the initial reports that there were, that this, not to say that nearly 3,000 who died on 9/11 and the other injuries are not consequential, but we had anticipated the potential damage far greater. And an assault of that magnitude on the soil of America was totally unheard of. And I must say that it's one that we had not anticipated. We had been told that there was a lot of activity in the terrorist community, but we had been assured that it was the kind of activity that had previously characterized terrorism from the radical elements in the Middle East, and that those were sort of like the embassy bombings and things like that. That
not civilian targets.
Hadn't touched America, and many of them were sort of especially governmental targets. They were not on our side of the ocean, they were on the other side of the ocean, and I don't mean to say that we would ever take those things lightly, but we hadn't an understanding of how much at risk our own culture was, especially some of the big symbols. And this is in spite of the fact, and we have to understand, this is a deficit in our understanding, because there had been almost 10 years earlier the effort and the first bombing. It was so bungled and so unsuccessful that I think it caused us to engage in a fatal error. It's always not not fatal, but it's a very serious area. It's always a very serious error when you underestimate your opponents.
Folks, again, that was a clip from our documentary entitled The Export. If you want to watch the entire thing, you can find it online at aclj.org. But folks, we have a mandate to stand in the gap for those who are being persecuted for their faith. People like Saeed Abedini, people like Miriam Ibrahim, and the thousands of others who you don't know their names, but they are persecuted because of their faith in Christ. If you want to tell this administration that this has got to be a priority for the United States of America, call now 877-989-2255 or sign online at aclj.org, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.
We must do all we can to bring an end to this global persecution of Christians, especially in the Middle East. That's why we're launching a new campaign, calling on the Obama administration to take all diplomatic efforts to protect Christians from this wave of persecutions. Add your name now. Call 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255, or add your name online, aclj.org.